From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Hello, everyone. This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network broadcast here at 1510 AM WMEX Boston. Dr. Bernie's show, Mind Health Matters, can be heard here every first Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also hear Dr. Bernie's show Wednesday through Friday at 12 p.m. and also at 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on our own station, DreamVisions7Radio.com. That's DreamVisions7Radio.com. And also, if you would like to get more information and great books and material on living life and dealing with all of the problems that life can throw at us, why don't you visit Bernie's website? His website is BernieSiegelMD.com. Let me give you that. It's Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, M-D.com. And today we welcome you to another Mind Health Matters radio show. And Bernie, good to have you as always. And today we're going to be discussing some interesting thoughts about, you know, when anger may be appropriate, why we choose to seek revenge rather than heal our right. lives and relationships, and maybe how we can all make a difference. So, Bernie, I know as always you've got great ideas brewing in that head of yours, so why don't we let them rip?
All right. No, just thinking, looking through USA Today, and there's an article on depressed teenagers. Uh-huh. And in one study a few years ago, they said that 70% of high school students had contemplated suicide.
My God.
Yeah. And I found, from my experience, because I always sort of jump into everything when I get invited into schools by teachers and the kids, I would say to the students, write a suicide note. So you don't have to sign it, but it's homework. You go home tonight and you write a suicide note. When you're done with that, you write a love note. Why should I commit suicide? Why am I worth loving? And then bring them in tomorrow. And they would bring them in. I'd say, all right, everybody come up, just drop it on the desk. Suicide on the left, love on the right. And, of course, what you see is 4 or 5 times higher pile of suicide notes than mm-hmm. love notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kids would look around the class, and you knew what was going on in their head was, hey, I'm not the only one.
Right.
I don't have to lie about it anymore.
Right.
And so, and when I say lie about it, I mean, when you're abused and you go into school and the teacher says, oh, what happened? I fell off my bike. You don't say, my father's an alcoholic and a drug addict and he just beat the shit out of me.
Mm.
Because, you know, you don't think everybody else in the class will understand. But in one school where they weren't afraid to do this, they found the suicide rate went down when they did this kind of project. And again, what happens is then the classroom becomes group therapy. See, then everybody isn't afraid to talk about their experience because they know there are other people there. You know, as I say, it mm-hmm. becomes like a therapy group because, hey, I'm not the only one, so I can talk about it. You know, so whether you're going to a cancer support group or Alcoholics Anonymous or, you know, suicide. And the other thing I found was it had to do with how they were brought up. What do I mean by that? Again, a line from East of Eden, John Steinbeck. I was impressed when I came across this reading something. We all experience rejection. With rejection comes a desire for revenge. Mm. With revenge, guilt. And there is the story of mankind.
Wow. Wow.
And when you read that and you look at the newspaper, it's like, wow. just what you said. You know, why does somebody walk into a school with a gun? Why do you walk into, you know, the place where you work with a gun? Why do you kill strangers out on the street? Why do you shoot a policeman? What the hell is going on? And for me, it's, in my mind, always the revenge that you want from the way you were treated. But what impressed the hell out of me, and we have to realize we have choices. And before we get into just discussing it philosophically, that an abused teenager, he wrote a book called, I can't remember the name of the book, but it'll come into my
head.
It'll
come to you.
But anyway, he was sexually abused by family and their friends. He said he sleeps in a room that's bare. If he wants a television set, he has to do a favor. Well, this goes way back a few decades when he developed AIDS due to all this exposure. And one day, he called me up and he said, because I was trying to help him survive the AIDS, and he said, "Dr. Siegel, I'm going to commit suicide." That kind of blew my mind. You see, look at the headlines. Everybody's killing everybody else. And I said to him, "Tony, I'll get you a gun. We'll kill your parents." And I mean it. I say those things seriously to people. I said, "I know people in New York. We'll get you a gun. You'll kill your parents. Why kill yourself?" And he said, "I never want to be like them."
Right.
That sentence always stays with me, you know, that we have that choice. No matter how we were treated, we still have a choice. And Nelson Mandela, you know, coming out of a concentration camp. But he said, "If I took the bitterness, the resentment, the hate, I'd be confined for the rest of my life."
Yeah, he would put himself right back in
prison.
Yeah,
so you walk out and forgive and go on with your life. And our pets have taught me that, too. When they, you know, one attacks the other and literally threatens her life with wounds from bites. But a few weeks later, when I'm looking for the one that was injured and I can't find her in our yard, I suddenly notice her hiding behind the dog that attacked her. You know, and I thought, wow, she certainly forgave him, and now she's using him because they became friends. You know, so I won't find her and bring her in the house when she wants to enjoy being outside. And again, it's if we could be that kind of complete creature and not look for revenge, but have what Schweitzer called a reverence for life. Because again, where I think of myself as neurotic, and these last few weeks with the drought in this area, there are more worms out on the pavement. I guess they're moving around because the land is so dry. So I'm picking them up and putting them back on the ground, trying to save their lives. And I always considered, literally, that you're neurotic. I mean, how many people got to walk around picking up worms all day? And then I came across some of Schweitzer's writing. He said, if you're walking out in the street after a rainfall and you see a worm on the pavement, pick it up and put it back on the earth. If you see an insect struggling in a puddle, put a leaf in for it to climb on. When I read that, it was really, thank you, Dr. Schweitzer. I am not as crazy as I thought.
Yeah,
and what I've seen is, you see what the difference is? Yes, you need to grow up with love. Then you're not violent with yourself also. Because a study of Harvard students was, did your parents love you? Now, they were asked that while college students. So they got a yes or a no. Then they looked them up 35 years later when they're in middle age, and they asked them their health history. 98% of those who said my parents didn't love me had suffered a major illness in the intervening years, and about 24% of those who said my parents loved me had. So, you know, you're abusing yourself, taking revenge on yourself in a sense, because what you're doing is unhealthy things because, well, that's okay, you know, I deserve it. Well, wait a minute, what do you deserve? Being an addict, an alcoholic, you know, 200 pounds overweight, who the hell knows, smoking. You know, why don't you stop and say, I have a choice. My desire is to be healthy. My desire is to reparent myself and to see that I'm worth loving rather than my desire is to, you know, give myself anything I want because of how I was treated. One of our kids, they grew up, because I was going to say, if you grow up with love, and that doesn't mean I liked them or I was a perfect parent. There are plenty of things that I know today would have made me a lot better parent, you know, 30, 40 years ago. But they knew they were loved, and that's what made the difference. So they put up with their parents. But we also had what I call a zoo in and around our house, a fenced-in yard with, I won't go into the long list of all the creatures we had, but, you know, we broke every zoning law in our town. Uh-huh. And I didn't know the zoning laws, so as far as I was concerned, this was all okay. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up, too, is because the police and our neighbors never reported me and our kids because they knew we were doing it out of love. So when I would call up about some exotic pet missing, the police never said, you can't have animals like that in your home, because vets were using us. You know, when people didn't want certain creatures,
I see.
They would always call me and say, hey, Siegel, will you take this? I'd say, sure, yeah. So they became family. But what did it lead to? It led to our kids having that reverence for life.
Mm-hmm.
One of ours is in law enforcement. In order to graduate from the FBI Academy, you have to say yes to this question. Are you capable of killing someone? That really shook me up when at his graduation, because they showed a film about all their training and these things. Now, you could say, well, if I'm saving the lives, you know, I'm a soldier,
right.
I'm a policeman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still, I would find it hard to pull the trigger,
mm-hmm.
okay? I always say I'd rather die loving somebody than hating somebody. But anyway, this same person, see, who says I could kill, sent me an email one day. He said, hey, I'm down in Virginia getting some training, and I went for a walk between classes, and I saw this turtle, and he has a sense of humor. He said it must have been a male who wouldn't ask for directions. So he said, I find this turtle on the street, and I spent half an hour looking for a pond to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that impressed me. Here he is spending a half an hour of his day to save the life of a turtle. And again, I think if we're brought up that way, with creatures around us, with a reverence for life, then all life becomes significant and important to us. And then we're not seeking revenge, and when the revenge is done, the guilt. So we either commit suicide then or get killed by, you know, the police.
Right.
And it's so tragic. I try to say to the kids also, well, more lines. He who seeks to save his life will lose it. What do you mean? If you give up your authentic self and the life you desire to make everybody else happy, you lost your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I hear them saying, I wanted to be a violin player, but my parents said, no, I had to be a lawyer. Well, he's lost his life,
mm-hmm.
you see. And that same guy, when he developed cancer, became a violinist, job in an orchestra, and didn't die. I mean, now he was enjoying his life. So eliminate what's killing you, not yourself.
You know, Bernie, as I'm listening to you, one of the thoughts that's coming to my mind is when we're talking about revenge or so many of the other emotions that take, you know, desperate control over ourselves, and we talk about that being a choice, it goes a little further back. You know, you brought up the word rejection
right.
in the very beginning, which I think is an extremely important word. And the word rejection really comes from fitting into a group, a family, the human race, friends. I feel connection is the most important thing in the world. I think, for example, you and I are friends. We're connected. We have other friends. And that connection is important. It's part of who we are. Some people, especially people who have desperate mental health problems or even everyday people who can't control themselves, have a lack of connection. And it even goes back to the animals that you talked about. When you're young and you have pets, you have a connection. You have a connection to something, part of nature, part of the world. Now, I grew up in New York, as you did, and although I didn't have a dog or a cat at the time, I did have a lot of different animals. So I had turtles, for example. So I would stop and help a turtle. But it goes back to being connected, to knowing something, feeling a connection, your connection to that other person, that other animal, a worm, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And I think connection is actually connection is one of the sources of happiness, you know. And so rejection happens because we feel disconnected.
Yeah. A couple of things. One is from Robert Frost. Home is a place that when you go there, they have to let you in. See? So as I said, I don't have to like what our kids are doing, but they know they're loved.
Right.
So that they're safe there. They can come there. And the other, what you were saying about rejection.
Mm-hmm.
The people who lived to be 100 in a study showed four characteristics. One was purpose in life. Mm. Two was clan, they called it. They had a relationship, a group.
Uh-huh.
And then they ate a reasonable, healthy diet, and they were active. And they said they didn't have to go to a gym, you know what I mean? But they weren't sitting on their butt all day. So, you know, but relationship. And again, when you get into health, mm-hmm. you have a heart attack, go home to a house with a dog, a year later, 5% of the people died. No dog in the house, 26%. So you'd say, what difference does it make? You know, because I get a laugh. Doctors need to think differently. Because sometimes they'll say, well, married men live longer than single men with after a heart attack or smoking. It's because their wife is telling them what to do and take care of themselves. I said, so if you live longer with a dog, it's because the dog growls and threatens to bite you, you know, if you're not eating the right food.
Yeah, right.
I mean, no, it's, again, the relationship which changes your chemistry.
Yes.
So your bonding hormones go up
yes.
when you pet a furry creature. And I'm impressed. I mean, our two dogs died in the last few months. I mean, we still have four cats in the house, and I'm waiting for God to send me another dog.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, when you walk with dogs, everybody talks to you. You know,
if I
take a walk by myself, I don't get all the conversations that I get if I'm with the dog. You know, from seniors, youngsters, from everybody. Mm-hmm. They all have something to say. Oh, how cute. It's not about me. You know, oh, how cute the dog is. And then we're in a conversation. How old is it? All those questions.
Sure.
So, again, the relationships and all these things, again, have been shown in medical studies where people are in support groups and different things, and the difference it makes and how it changes their attitude and state of mind.
Well, finally, it's taken years. It's taken years for that to, you know, with rescue dogs and therapy dogs. I mean, you talked about it long ago, and it's only found its way into the medical profession recently, rather recently anyway.
Yeah, and let me mention two more words, the love and anger. Love, the opposite of love is indifference, rejection, and abuse, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not hate and fear. And the other is that there is righteous indignation. See, there's appropriate anger.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you feel you're not being treated with respect, you have a right to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always admired our kids when they said to me, you don't love me as much as we have five. You don't love me as much as my brother. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, imagine a kid going up to his father and criticizing his father for not loving him enough. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I don't get 20% of your time. You got five kids. I should have 20%. I said, your brother is driving us crazy. So he gets 40%. Now, I had to learn something from that, too. Because, you see, you know, if you're a bully at school, if you're a troublemaker, you're getting attention. It's better than nothing, you know, than the indifference and rejection.
Right.
So even if you misbehave, you get attention. And I would laugh and say to my patients when I would watch them doing things, you know, like smoking under a no smoking sign, and I'd say, "Oh, you're looking for attention," and their eyes would light up, like he knows me.
Mm.
You see, because they wanted attention. So I'll do something wrong, and everybody'll yell at me, but at least they're paying attention. You know, they're focusing on me.
Yeah.
And so I would focus in a humorous and healthy way, and then slowly get them to change. But I'd say to everybody, if you're not treated with respect, it's okay to get angry. Anger doesn't hurt somebody. You can say, "I don't like how you're treating me. I love you, but I don't like how you're treating me." Because I would hear that from lots of people when I would express anger. "Oh, you're writing books about love and you're yelling at me." I said, "Yeah, I don't like how you're treating me. I love you." And they, you know, it got through to them then that there was a difference in those two things. And I think by reparenting each other, that how do we make the difference? By loving one another. You know, we say not liking, but loving.
Well, that music's coming up in the background, which means we're going to take a very small break, and we're going to be back. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about rejection, revenge, and all the other things. And I'd like to really talk more about anger and when it's appropriate, maybe when it's not. And so stay tuned to us. We'll be right back.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings in the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, Inspiring True Stories of Healing, Gratitude, and Love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Daily Messages of Inspiration, Hope, and Love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Life's winding path reveals many truths. Join us every fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. for Healing Journeys with Michael Kobarek, where we explore how in the midst of uncertainty, we can find inner peace and guidance. The healing energy we receive from those who cross our paths, the mystical realms of alternative therapies, and the power to heal that lies within each of us. Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show every first and third Sunday, 9 to 10 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Every first and third Sunday from 9 to 10 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Tune in every first Sunday at 6 p.m. for Maximum Success, the Coach Brew Show. You'll learn success strategies to take your game to the next level from performance consultant John Brubaker. Maximum Success explores why winners win and teaches you the keys to peak performance. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
The Dream Vision 7 Radio Network presents Kids for Love. It's a project, a mission, and a radio show. Come join Deborah Beauvais and her young co-hosts every second Sunday at 6 p.m. as we celebrate kids making a difference. We invite other kids to join in for the spirited conversation filled with creative ideas and possibilities to start their own mission. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world by getting inspired to help others in need. Kids for Love Project. Celebrating kids that empower others. That's every second Sunday at 6 p.m.
The pressure is on. Can you feel it? Life as we've known it is no longer working. Why? We are awakening. The true core self is alive within us now and has a new life to live. What does this mean? How do we live from here? Join us live every third Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern as spiritual embodiment coach and trainer Ambujam Rose explains this mass awakening. Ambujam's direct approach teaches you how to navigate this new wild ride, educates you on how to strengthen your spiritual core, and takes your calls for personal spiritual core training. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Hi, welcome back. This is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, and I'm Lionel Ketchian, and we're talking about some of the things that make life more livable. And, you know, our emotions can be our friend or our enemy. So that's some of the stuff that we're talking about. And, Bernie, I have a thought from our old friend Aristotle, and he brought up anger, and this is what he had said. And I was wondering what you thought about this one. Anyone can become angry. That's easy. But to be angry with the right person at the right time and for the right purpose and in the right way, that is not within everyone's power, and that is not easy. Aristotle. So what do you think about that thought, about his ideas on anger?
Well, I think he's saying what we're saying, you know, that you could say, that the revenge and the abuse of others is the anger. But who is it at, really directed at? As I said, if it's directed at your parents or your school teacher, or somebody else who has abused you, and then you take it out on the wrong people.
That's so very good.
I think it's very important that you realize who is the problem in my life and how can I make a difference.
So you're saying, so it isn't a reaction from maybe your past conditioning or old patterns or something in your own background. It's a response to something
right.
that needs addressing.
Yeah, I think it's an inappropriate response.
Very good.
You know,
I like that.
What you've experienced, yeah.
Yeah,
and
I think that's profound.
Part of it's inappropriate because nobody ever taught you. I called them mottos to live by.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always repeating them to people. What did I grow up with? Do what makes you happy. That's how you made decisions.
Mm.
I mean it. Whether it's who to marry, what job to take, where to go.
Well, I know that's what your mother taught you.
Yeah. And the next was, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did not enjoy these answers as a kid. But, see, it put my mind in a different place. Something would happen, I'd say, all right, let's see if my mother's right, you know, because if she isn't, I'm going to let her know. And it could be 3 months or 6 months later something would happen,
right.
And I'd say, damn it, she's right, because if that other thing hadn't happened, this wouldn't happen, you know?
Yeah.
And the last was that material things were to make the world a better place for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to get a bigger house, bigger car, you know, all kinds of, you know, things to impress the neighbors. It was to help everyone with it.
To make a difference.
Yeah.
As well.
And see, again, in my father's case, that came from his father dying when he was 12 of tuberculosis, leaving six kids and a wife and no life insurance.
Oh, wow.
And what they had to learn from the disaster. See, I mean, the reason I bring that up, too, is I was shocked one day to hear my father say, oh, one of the best things that ever happened to me was my father dying when I was 12 years old.
Yeah, really?
I saw him later. I said, what the hell are you talking about? He said, it taught me what was important about life.
Mm-hmm.
What a different viewpoint he had. See, again, and all these memories are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I broke a neighbor's toy. You may have heard me talk about this. When I was a kid, I was very jealous of a neighbor. He had this fancy toy that I really wanted. So I broke it so he wouldn't have it because I didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, what do his parents do? They come over to our house and they tell my parents what your kid did. The next day, my father comes home from work with that toy, walks over to me, says, "Here, I knew that you wanted this."
Uh-huh.
And he hands it to me and walks away.
Wow.
Now, I know, because I knew him, I could have kept that. And he wouldn't have yelled at me. I'm not saying he'd have been proud of me, but he handed it to me. He didn't say, "Give this to the kid."
Right.
My neighbor. But I can always remember that I thought my head was going to explode because I knew if I kept it, I wouldn't survive, because of my inner conflict. Mm-hmm. So I went over and gave it to the kid, and we were friends again. But that's the way my father did things. See, never by punishing. He would punish in his way, you know, in an emotional way, not in a physical way.
Wow.
And believe
me, that's rare.
He had a lot of power. Mm-hmm. I mean, my mother could get me to do anything because all she had to say to me is, "If you don't do it, I'm telling your father when he comes home." Oh, no, don't tell him.
Yeah, right.
Because I didn't want to upset him. He was such a,
the
kind of man he was. And
wow.
So, again, and that's why the solution to this, let me give you the solution we can all participate in. A suicidal teenager is in my office one day. "Dr. Siegel, what is it?" "You're my CD." I said, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm a CD." "You're my chosen dad." That has stayed with me forever.
Mm.
And I have to tell you this story. I came home one day from the office, and there's a message on the answering machine. "Dr. Siegel, do you know Jack Kevorkian's phone number? I have been sexually abused by my father. I have a brain tumor. I want to be dead, and I want Dr. Kevorkian to help me." And I called her up, and I said, "No, I don't have Jack Kevorkian's phone number." "Why do you want to be dead?" And that's when she told me these stories. I said, "Look, I love you. You're a child of God. I want you to draw some pictures for me and send them to me."
Hmm.
And she agreed to do it. And one of the pictures showed her face with a lot of spots on them. And I said, "What's that about?" "That's how many times he did it." And the other was a picture of a tree with a big black area in it, like a knot hole. And I know those are the years that she was abused. And I say that because if you know her age and you measured the tree, you'd know what years that black dot was in.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to her, "I love you. I'll be your CD. And we developed a relationship. And she's alive today and just a loving child because part of why I share this, she got me a subscription as a gift to Guidepost. That was Norman Vincent Peale's magazine he started years ago. And some of the stories in there had me in tears one week. Mm. So I, emailed her to thank her. And she wrote back to me with a card. And I always say I get cards from her on Father's Day and my birthday before our kids. But she wrote saying, "Dad, I wanted you to know that all my life you've been my hero." Oh, wait, no, this is from one of our kids. Let me share from Becky first.
Okay.
She said, "A smile ran across my face today because you ran across my mind." Funny how often that happens. Inside, she wrote, "I think of you every day. You are an angel in my life. All my love, Becky." And then, "Love you, Rosie." Why the Rosie? Because I said to her, pick a new name, start a new life. And she picked Rosie, and I thought that was significant, as my mother's name was Rose, so it was a real connection. But the kid I mentioned earlier, I might as well, because this is in something I wrote about being a CD, that we can all be a chosen dad, a chosen mother for others. And if we persist in loving them, they begin to change their self-destructive behavior. I've seen that in my office. When I would keep giving people return visits, even though they didn't do a damn thing I suggested, you know, didn't take their medications or addicted to drugs, I'd say, see you in 2 weeks. After a few months, suddenly they're wearing clean clothes, not taking the drugs, and changing. Why? Because somebody said, I care about you, and really proved to them that they made a difference. And the boy who drove us crazy, and I've apologized to him and said, hey, if I knew then what I knew today, I would have been a better father. Mm-hmm. But he wrote this, Dad, I just wanted you to know, this is in an email, that all my life you've been my hero. I don't think there is anyone else in the world that will ever know what it means to have a father like you and a mother like Mom. I just wanted you to know this, so if someday comes that I can't tell you how much you both mean to me, you will know because I put it into words way before that day came. Love.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's one paragraph out of the letter. You know, just the things he was thankful for, whether it was that I came to school with parts of the human body to show the class, or, you know, that I was there doing things with him. And all the pets he had that, you know, we let him have. And I think that helped him survive, that if he was having a tough time, he got a lot of love out of all the creatures that he cared for and brought up. And I may add, they all had names. I mean, they were all, like, part of the family and, like, children. So you didn't say, how's the skunk, you know, or how's the goat? It was the name of... you know, that creature. And it was hard to get babysitters, so that was the only thing, because they didn't want to be in a house where all these animals were roaming around.
Yeah, you need a babysitter and a zookeeper at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, we've got that music in the background again, so we're coming up on another very small break, and stay with us. We've got some interesting things to share with you when we come back with Dr. Bernie Siegel and Lionel Ketchian. We'll be right back. Hang in there.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Life. We can either be bystanders or creators. Now is the time to awaken to your divine identity and the power of the I Am within. to create a joyous and fulfilled life, no matter what your circumstances are. There are answers to life's big questions, and there is a spiritual path that leads to soul liberation and ascension. Join us every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Prophets for the New Age with Carl and Nancy Showalter on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Tired of having more month than money? Maybe it's time to make a change. The Money Nerve Radio Show provides tools for you to manage your money and reduce your stress. Listen to The Money Nerve Radio Show with Bob Wheeler the fourth Sunday of each month at 6 p.m. Eastern. Visit themoneynerve.com to download smart financial tools. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Lionel Ketchian and Dr. Bernie Siegel on the Mind Health Matters show. We're talking about everything that can help us lead a better, loving, and actually happier life. So, Bernie, all these things you're sharing, to me, are all about connection. You know, yeah. All these stories, family, the people you've helped, the way you've made a difference, right. Even your father. It's connection. It's feeling a part right. of being with another person.
And these people show up in your life. I mean, you know, I'll be out, you know, could be in Stop and Shop. I was at the vet with our animals. And people come over and say, 20 years ago, you operated on me.
Uh-huh.
And they'll tell me the details, not of the surgery, but of the words I said to them.
Right.
And what
right.
helped them. And that always impresses me that I made a difference at that moment, you know, to take the fear away with humor, you know, showing that I cared for them as a human being mm-hmm. and what a difference it made. But let me just share something with you because, I mean, here's somebody I've been, like, giving therapy to through emails. She is, I mean, so many problems and just, you know, never seems able to handle it. But I keep emailing up and back. And she has no sense of humor. I emailed her. I said, cheer up. Things could be worse. So I cheered up, and things got worse. Now, what does she email me back? What happened? Instead of laughing, you know, that I'm kidding. I cheered up, and things got worse,
uh-huh.
you know. So I have to email her and say, I'm just kidding.
Right.
But that's what's so sad. If you don't grow up with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And we've got to share that with each other.
Bernie, do you think you need to grow up with a sense of humor in order to have one? Do you think it could develop?
It's hard as hell to develop it, you know, if nobody ever teased. Because I always say to parents,
yeah.
Let me say this, too, that who can be the chosen parent? School teachers, clergy,
right.
politicians, your neighbor, anyone, you know, who's available to you and shows they care mm-hmm. can fulfill that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see your work as a way of helping people, you know, I mean, you can be working in a restaurant serving people, but you let them know you care about them. And I
yes.
think that's, you know, the difference. And what was your question again? Because my mind went off. Do you remember?
No, well, we were talking about humor, and I was wondering if it's
oh,
if
yeah.
humor
let me
say is something
this.
You could develop.
Yeah. yeah. What I tell people is, embarrass your children regularly for two reasons. One is when you're ready to die, you can turn to them and say, hey, tell me things you remember about our life together. And
yeah.
you'll die laughing, as my father did. And I mean that literally.
Wow.
He died laughing,
wow.
looking so healthy that I wow. thought he would change his mind.
Wow.
Because he told us he was going to die, you know, on a certain day. So we all got together.
So, hey, so we all know where you got your sense of humor from, that's for sure.
Yeah. But you see, the thing about embarrassing, and this has happened truthfully, why were my kids grateful for me?
Dad, thank you.
What are you thanking me for? You just got home from school? What's going on? Oh, I did something at school today. No punishment, though. All I heard were the teachers saying, well, you know who his father is? Now, those are true stories. I'm not making them up. And they've come home from work with the same thing.
Funny.
You know who his father is. So what do you expect? So that gives them a freedom, though. And I found, as I said, with patients, I mean, I won't tell you some of the craziest things, but like a lawyer walks into your office, serious, thinking lawyer, and I may add, to quote another lawyer, I came to a conclusion that was eminently reasonable, totally logical, and completely wrong, because while learning to think, I almost forgot how to feel.
Mm.
He needed
yeah.
a tragedy to
yeah, that's what
wake
taught.
Him up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
anyway, this lawyer said, all right, now I want you to explain why I need to have surgery. And I thought, here goes my day, trying to talk to a lawyer about mm-hmm. surgery, and, you know, like you're in the courtroom. You know,
yeah.
yeah. I said to him, well, I have 5 children and a lot of tuition bills, so I need to operate on you. And he burst out laughing. And then, you see, there were 2 people sitting in the office. You know what I mean? Not a lawyer and a doctor, but 2 guys who could talk to each other. And we went ahead with the surgery, but he laughed and said, okay, now tell me why. But he was in a different mode. You know, I had readjusted his brain after. Because when you laugh, you can't
yep.
fear, you can't hate. I mean, it's just
true.
One of the greatest gifts. I always say love and laughter, you know, are the 2 things that we can offer each other.
True.
But to keep them working together. So it gets you through the difficult times when those things are there for you. And as mm-hmm. I say, it programs your children, because while they're growing up, this has been restated over and over with the epigenetics, that the kids are in a hypnotic state, their brain. So in the early years of life, what your parents say to you hypnotizes you, that you're a failure. I mean, I don't make up these stories, what mm-hmm. they've heard. You're a failure. You embarrass us. We're going to dress you in dark colors so nobody will notice you. That woman also said, I found my authentic life from reading your books after I developed cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the sad, you know, she needed a life-threatening illness
yep.
to wake up and say, I'm going to buy bright clothes and change my life and not let my parents do this. And one other patient I had came in one day smiling. What are you smiling about? Oh, my apartment was robbed. I said, that's something to smile about? Yes. My mother always said, don't be too happy, because something good is always followed by something bad. So I came home from vacation. My apartment was robbed. I can relax now.
Yeah, the bad is over with.
Yeah, think of my parents versus that parent. Yeah, it's just insane to think that parents would do that. But again, it's because they've been programmed. As one woman said, my parents committed suicide when I was a child.
Wow.
I must have been a failure as a child.
Sure.
She's blaming herself.
Sure.
And
you know behind all of this is our thinking.
Yep.
And so, yeah, we have the power of choice, but not when our thinking gets in the way. And, you know, my feeling is that a rational mind is not easy to come by, and it needs to be developed and cultivated. And, of course, childhood, the right parents can cultivate a rational mind. But let's say we're not given all the tools necessary starting out. We've got to find ways to create rationality in our own thinking, because otherwise we're going to be against ourselves.
Yeah, I always say to people, reparent yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at things I have lying on my desk. This fortune cookie. When things go wrong, don't go with them. You know,
good,
what a simple statement, but if you
it's
think
true.
About it, yeah, why not live that way?
It's true.
And, you know, you have your happiness club.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've ever read this to you by Leo Rostin. I cannot believe that the purpose of life is to be happy. I think the purpose of life is to be useful, to be responsible, to be compassionate. It is above all to matter, to count, to stand for something, to have made some difference that you lived at all. But, of course, I think when you do that, you end up happy.
And I think if you...
Knowing you made a difference.
Yeah, sure, sure. And if you could ever get to happiness in your life, you know, at some point, you find it, you put it there, you hold that thought, you will develop all the traits that you just talked about, because happy people are friendlier, more giving, more, you know, they want to be connected to others. That's the truth of it. So whether it comes from it or, you know, as a result of it, it's something to cultivate.
Go ahead.
All right, I'll finish, because otherwise I won't have a chance to finish. Right. I know you too well.
Go ahead.
You know, I know you're a wordsmith. You come up with words. Now, I'm sure you've thought of this before, but when you proposed anger as something to talk about, I realized that the word anger, when you put a D in front of it, you end up with danger.
Mm.
I found that very interesting. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it is. It, you know, as I mentioned, there's healthy anger, meaning if you're not treated with respect, you speak up. It's not about the person. It's about how you're being treated.
Mm-hmm.
But when it gets beyond that, it's like a Monday morning syndrome, when you have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you live with that inner anger, it's going to take its toll on your body. Versus the person who is choosing, you know, to do something useful and happy. I used to, you know, mention what I just read to you about making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have pins that were made, you know, little circular pins that said on the outside, "You make a difference."
Mm-hmm.
And I would keep a handful of them in my pocket. And I could be in an airport and see somebody do something nice. I'd walk over, I'd say, "Here." And I'd pin it on them.
Beautiful.
And boy, their faces would light up. And I would just give them out in the hospital and other places.
Now, you know what I love about that is you're encouraging good behavior. You're rewarding it.
Yeah.
When a lot of people walk around, all they talk about is what they don't like about other people. And they tell them. You're giving them the exact
the
opposite.
Nice things. One of the medical secretaries at the hospital, because I began to change the pin in the hospital to their name with a rainbow behind it. So I would just walk up and scare them. You know, the doctor walks over to you in the hospital and says, "What's your name?" And they all thought, "What the hell did I do?" So they would tell me their name, and I would leave and then come back with a gift. And then they'd be all smiles, and I would tell them it's because of their nice behavior. And she's the only person in all the years I was doing this, when I said, "What's your name?" She said, "Why do you want to know?" And I said, "I want to give you a gift. You have such a wonderful effect on everybody around you at the desk." She said, "Sit down. I'll tell you a story." She said, "I've been here 2 years. I hated the job when I took it. I went to the office. I said, I quit." They said, "You can't quit. You have to give 2 weeks' notice." She said, "I gave them notice. I got up every day miserable for 2 weeks. The last day I got up happy, I went to work happy. I noticed something. Everybody else was happy. So I decided to come in happy." And I say, that can be the closing statement, you know, that we all have a choice. You can wake up and decide to be happy.
Absolutely. And Bernie, thank you very much for another wonderful program. We love you. Thank you for making a positive difference for all of us.
And
we hope you tune in again.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.